Would you introduce yourself, please?
My name is Cameron, and my artist name is Glasser.
How'd you come up? No, I'm just kidding.
You got me.
New York humor.
Yeah.
I like revisionist history because the internet is a place of doom, inaccuracy, and insanity. Not necessarily in that order. So here's some revisionist history. And here you said this, so here we go. Were you born in 1983 or 1984? Or on the
Wait,
cusp?
Wait, are you challenging my Wikipedia page?
Oh, you bet I am.
The thing is, I love the ambiguity of it. I really love the ambiguity
of it,
so I want to kind of keep it like.
So you were then we
who could, like what year was she born? I don't know.
Okay, so wait, so you are responsible.
It was one of the two.
So are you responsible for that?
No, but actually, it's been brought up to me before, and I just really like that. I really love the ambiguity. So.
So what should we go with?
That you know, I'm a woman of a certain age.
Boston, Dad, Blue Man Group in Berlin,
yes.
No less. We'll get there. Mom in this very weird, strange HSR thing.
Mm-hmm.
Bay Area, age 10, San Francisco State. Foreign-born singer brings you out into the world and makes you realize you can be a canary and sing and influences you and stuff.
Well, I mean,
no, I'm this is like I said, this is revisionist history.
Okay, all right.
Helped out with your songwriting. Let's see. I know, right? Isn't this great?
That's so annoying. I think it's more about how people ask things. I've been I've been interviewed and asked questions that had sort of an answer baked into them. I've been asked questions, is it this or is it that? And it's the other.
Well, it's obvious. It's always that.
Right.
It's never this.
It's never this. Well, I think it's really important that that you ask me that because I would love to know. One thing I wish people knew about me, which isn't always, I guess, evident from my output, is that I'm hilarious. And that's not in my damn Wikipedia page, is it?
We'll be the judge of that. We'll see, Justin.
That I'm an incredible mimic. It doesn't say anything about that on there, does it? That I can do...
Ain't got no mimic. Nope. Okay, wait. But you see, this also gives me an opportunity to go off the rails here.
Okay, go off the rails,
What's
please.
The best thing you mimic?
Ooh. Okay, I can do a really good Milhouse from The Simpsons, and I'll be happy to do it for your listeners.
As James Brown says, hit me.
Okay, wait, I need to focus. Okay, I can only say one thing, and it is, hey, Bart.
This is really fun, by the way, because people in LA either do this, Los Feliz, Los Feliz.
Well, I always called it Los Feliz because that's what everyone called it around
me. Too,
me.
But I've got a lot of hipsters now saying
Los Feliz.
Because what was it like in 2009?
In 2009?
It was a very different vibe there. It was not ultra cool on Hillhurst in Vermont,
no.
I would imagine.
I mean, it was, I don't know, it was the beginning. The seeds were there. I think I moved to that area in 2006, I think. And so over those few years, there were more and more businesses opening that looked like they were, as I just said to Robbie recently, like from a Wes Anderson movie. Curated was a word
right.
That was beginning to get tossed
that
around
long
quite
ago.
A lot.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I think, I don't know, a lot of neighbors around me were like writers, TV writers, and
yeah.
And just families. It was kind of sleepy. And it wasn't the street culture that is around there now. I mean, things have changed so much in Los Angeles.
Obviously, a lot of things have gotten into your DNA.
Yeah.
Did you say, Mom, Dad, I want to take piano lessons? Or did they say, hey, you know what? Piano lessons.
No, I actually, I think I wanted to take piano lessons because I had a friend who was taking piano lessons. And but I also there's a recording of me singing at age 2, and I think my parents were just like, "Wow, she has good pitch, she's got an ear, let's go." And
isn't
they were
that dangerous
really
when your parents recognize that?
Yeah. I mean, my childhood was spent a lot in the car driving to Connecticut to see my mom's parents. My mom grew up in Connecticut. So we would drive from Boston to Connecticut on the weekends. And we spent so much time in the car listening to music. And my dad, who loves driving and listening to music and singing along, would be like, "Learn this harmony." And then he would also be like, "Cams, pick out the bass," you know? And I would just like learn music that way.
But you were okay with that.
Well, I mean, when you're a kid, like, is there okay? I mean, you're just sort of, don't know.
But was there an age where you kind of went, "This isn't exactly like my friend's parents"?
Oh, I was aware immediately. I was, any other time I met a child, I probably didn't have a lot of other child friends until maybe, I had cousins that we would visit in Chicago like once a year, but I think probably preschool was when I met other kids, and I remember immediately knowing that I was different from them.
Isn't that the coolest thing ever, though?
Is it? Yeah, I mean, I think it was challenging for me, actually. But, you know, as they say, character building.
Yeah.
I felt really different from everyone for the longest time. And I was actually just telling Robbie, my friend who's with me here, about how in fifth grade, I was into Nirvana, and I was private about it because I was afraid that the kids at school would like laugh at me. And then in sixth grade, I decided to like boldly come in and be like, "I love Nirvana." And that was like, and I was like me from then on. But it was like up till then a torturous effort in hiding.
Interesting.
Being different.
Interesting.
I was, my dad actually calls it my young Republican phase.
This thing, whatever you want to call it, right? And people probably try to define it. I mean, do you call it a project? Do you call it, what do you even call it? And do you call it?
I guess I don't call it. I mean, it's weird. I feel challenged when people are like your band or, you know, like I think, or Glasser is a band or is a project. I don't really know what to say. I would say it's a part of me. And I also think just regarding the outfits and performance stuff, there is this like dichotomy in me of the person who wants to like still at from that young age assimilate and be accepted into the fold.
And how's that working for you?
And this kind of desperation to be seen as who I am, which is something else, I guess. I don't know. I mean, I'm not sure that I am so different from everyone else at this stage, but I think that there's like a kind of, I don't know. I think a lot of performers I've noticed are alternately shy and bombastically crazy. I know that there's a thing that happens for me when I step in front of people and sing where like I feel really great doing that. Something kind of takes over and I'm like, I can do this. But before I do it, like, you know, moments before, I have in my head like a fear of not making it. That Oscar Wilde quote or something like, "Be yourself because everyone else is taken." Is that Oscar Wilde? I don't know.
I don't know.
Are you?
Hello, Oscar. Oh, you're dead. Wait. Okay, we'll get back to you. Sorry.
Ask Morrissey. Actually, he would know.
You know, we could ask him all we want. You know what he's going to do? He probably just won't show up anyway.
No, he won't.
He won't show up to answer. It doesn't matter. When did you know you knew how to write a song? And when I say write a song, a song that's going to get someone like me to go, yeah, I've got to get to know that person. And others like me.
I think that when I knew that I could write a song, predates anything like what I knew other people would think, or I don't know. Like I think as soon as I wrote a song, I was like, oh, I can write songs. And I think I trusted my own taste to a point. I mean, God, I was such a snob growing up. I was such an incredible snob about music.
Yay.
And so I really, I mean, you know, my first record I didn't make until I was in my mid-20s. So I basically had all that time to bake in the oven, you know? I just emerged, and all of the songs on that record are basically the first songs I wrote.
Wow.
So I but actually that's not true, because I wrote one song when I was 15 and never wrote another one after that until years later. But
oh, that's such a good segue.
Great.
I'm going to have some fun here. I have to approach this in a way that's going to allow you to be really funny.
Okay. I have no fears about that.
Ready?
Yeah.
2009, 2013, 2018, 2022. How many times are you asked on a daily basis, to use the kids' term, WTF do you do in between making these friggin' records, gosh golly? And I know, and I'm doing this purposely.
Okay.
Because I have read you saying multiple times, I just wish people would just leave me alone and understand that I'm an artist and I make these things when there's enough juice, when there's enough things that are there. And in between, guess what? I do all sorts of creative things.
Yeah.
But they're not necessarily this brand. Mm-hmm. They're other things.
Yeah.
Now, am I close there?
Yes, you are totally close. I mean,
I just want to solve this. My job here,
yeah,
is to read some of these things and see if I can put them to bed, because I don't want you to have to go through the rest of your life.
Right.
I'm being a very considerate person here. I'm being a very empathetic.
You are. You're very here. Empathetic.
I'm trying to help you out, so you just don't. I'm trying to help me out, so I don't have to read another review of your next record in 2094. And they say, finally, another record.
She did that Nirvana's cover
finally,
record.
Finally, she did something. It's about time.
Centennial tribute.
Right, yeah. She, tell people three things or two things that you do in between making records.
Well, I learned how to do tricks on a jet ski.
Oh, yeah, you sure? We're going to get there. Yes, you did.
I learned how to use Ableton.
But no, seriously, I mean, you're day to day. You made a record.
Yeah.
You wake up in the morning, yeah. Then you're out of the cycle and you're out of the promo phase.
Yeah.
And it's a year and a half from now.
Yeah.
You're probably already starting to write again. I mean, it's not like you're sitting there going, oh, well, I'm just going to figure it out.
Yeah. You know, actually, it's interesting. After the second record, there was a huge drop in my momentum for myself. I really lost the thread for myself. And partly because I had no prior experience of working at being an artist. Except for that I was, you know, I had done it two times making a record, but I just had no kind of, you know, understanding of myself at this is what I do, this is what I keep doing. And it was all done within the structure of the music industry. So I really kind of spun out feeling kind of a lack of ownership of it. What is it that I actually do? And a big part of that was this sort of dissolution of several key professional relationships that were holding together the operation prior to that, that I didn't really, I don't know how to explain it. I mean, the whole thing is that, right, you're like, when did you know that you could write a song? But also, like, why didn't you work within this structure? And it's like, the real thing is that to make music is a magical gift that is seemingly given out of nowhere. And to really believe in that part of it requires that you honor that regardless of any other type of structure that is so imposed by every single person that you know, including your own parents, that you are the person who does this and you need to do this. And every person you know is like, when are you doing that again? When are you doing that again? When are you doing that again? And to really honor this sort of gift from heaven that you feel when you get the you know, the wind changes direction and you know that there's a song, is to say, I don't know. And to say that is the most important thing. And for me in that time, that is how I restructured myself. I needed to restructure around saying, it's okay that you don't know how this is going to turn into a product, but just keep holding this beautiful thing and saying, here, like, I want you to live. And whether or not you live and make me a career artist is not important. I just need you to be my priority. And that was my job within that time. And it is my job now.
I use the word crux a lot.
Yeah.
I just do.
Yeah.
It's like, and people look
it's
at you
such
like,
a great word.
And you're like, what's the crux?
Yeah.
And people are like,
damn it.
But it's such a great word. And yet,
yeah,
all these things that you've done to get to this,
mm-hmm,
in a stew, and I will approach this looking you straight in the eye with, you know, really deep loss.
Yeah.
Feeling all of this terribleness,
yeah,
and sadness,
mm-hmm,
as fully as you have.
Mm.
I mean, this has got to be another section of you.
Absolutely.
Because you were describing the part where you got lost.
Yeah.
It sounds like this one is equally life. I hate the word life changing, because, mm-hmm, everybody says that.
No, it was, though. It really was.
But I hear it in every pore of this record.
Yeah.
Is because of what you were feeling.
Yeah,
and it's beyond catharsis to me. It's like, it's a level up from catharsis.
Thank you. That's really, really a great compliment. So the transformation, the first part of the transformation was this like understanding with myself that I can't really look outside of myself to understand what kind of artist I am and what, you know, what it means to me to be in this position. But, and that was a really intense, you know, I think it's ongoing kind of change in a person. But then, and it requires quite a lot of confidence, you know, to say like, but I still want to keep doing this. And I, you know, and, but then on top of that change in myself, my first love died. I'll just say for your listeners in case they don't know. My first love died of an accidental fentanyl overdose. And it was...
Oh, boy.
It was really... That was a very huge event in my life that I actually anticipated many times before it happened. But you can't, you know, it's... They always say
you watch people, right? You watch people and you think, no,
right.
It won't happen.
Right. Well, yeah. I knew that there was a strong possibility that it could happen, but you know, you always know that that life is so fragile, and
yep.
but I hadn't experienced that kind of loss where you have like cellular memory of someone's voice, and I had a psychedelic grief ride, and it did change me, and I listened recently to a ton of demos that I did for Crux that were made within the time span, just, I would say, 3 months following that death. And they are wild. And I just was thinking, like, I have to get back to this. This is really insane creative space. I would like to not lose more people, but, you know, it really was just a psychedelic ride that I was on, and just moment to moment experience of emotions and body emotions and things like that.
I've invented a thing called a musical sandwich. And what that is two of your songs on the outside, and then you get to pick by anybody you want in between.